now on Mitchell's Front Page, talking freely with Stephanie Asher.
And Stephanie Asher, it's good to see you back in person in the studio once again. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Mitchell. It's good to be back.
Yeah, now there's so much to talk about today. You talked about the five B's, which I thought was very creative, but a very good way to summarise what we're in fact here to talk about. Of course, the first one being the speaker, Bronwyn Bishop. We weren't going to talk about her today, but we now have to.
We do have to, don't we? It reached that point where it had to crack, didn't it? It will be interesting to see, I think, if the Liberal Party start going after some of the key Labor figures now on the same issues.
Which they would probably be entitled to do.
Yeah, you'd think that that was possibly the purpose. But, I mean, I said last week, and I to back it up again, it's very easy to sit back in judgment, isn't it, on this issue? And, of course, the whole lifestyle choices that Bronwyn Bishop declared and showed and made, finally, does tell a bit of a riveting story. But I maintain that, you know, this sort of thing's an area where there's a lot of grey in it and a lot of people wouldn't bear intense scrutiny. And I don't know that either party will be able to hold up to much scrutiny on this issue.
Yeah, well, a lot of people criticised the Prime Minister for saying that the problem was with the system rather than with the Speaker, but I blame the system.
Yes, in part. It's funny, isn't it? Because I think it's that sense of entitlement or power or whatever does different things to different people.
Yeah.
And I think as soon as some people get into power, they almost relish it and they start throwing the corporate card or whatever it is around. And other people, they don't change their behaviour. And I think in a lot of situations, it is insidious too. That's what I was saying last week. You sort of don't really realise that everyone around you is doing it, so you've been caught up in it. And
yeah.
I think, you know, a couple of Joe Hockey's comments sort of display that sort of situation where it's just become their own little bubble and their own little paradigm of behaviour.
But for example, the manager of opposition business in the House, Tony Burke, who was one person who was leading this charge against the Speaker, I think has had about 10 to 15 times where he's had to pay back money because of expenses. So you have to make sure that your own house is in order before you start criticising other people's.
That's right. I think there's plenty of glass houses and stone throwing going
exactly.
on, isn't there?
That's the metaphor.
I think the resignation was, it was inevitable once she delayed the apology. For me, in all PR matters, the action needs to be swift, decisive and honest. Right at the beginning. As soon as you start covering up truth, you're a goner.
Well, that's exactly what I was saying a little bit earlier on. Why did this drag on for 3 weeks? And the Prime Minister said that it was the right decision for Bronwyn Bishop to stand down, but last week it wasn't the right decision.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it just looks ridiculous, and they've lost all this political capital trying to defend her, and now they've got nothing to show for it, because the people that never liked Bronwyn Bishop anyway are saying, well, why didn't you get rid of her sooner? And, of course, the people that liked Bronwyn Bishop and said she should have stayed are now upset. So
that's right. They've managed to achieve a lose-lose.
I know. Exactly. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, I think people will forgive in a climate of honesty, but they really dig in. And people really, Australians really dig in when someone refuses to tell the truth. They just won't let it go.
That's right. Yep. Mm. Exactly right. So that's that done and dusted. But I would like to see some changes to the expense reforms. I mean, I talked about, first of all, making it very clear about what you're entitled to claim for what and what mode of transport you're allowed to use in certain situations. And then second of all, making it very open and transparent. So maybe even a website where people can go to and it's updated on a weekly basis. And then if the politicians aren't comfortable with people going over it, members of the public looking at it with a fine-tooth comb, then they wouldn't do it.
That's right. I think that's some really good suggestions there. I was interested in your comments about business class too, based on stature was an interesting one, because for me, when I'm travelling, I'm often writing speeches or confidential documents, and in economy, it's really difficult because you have, I mean, I usually do travel economy, but very difficult because you have two strangers sitting next to you reading your very confidential information. So I think business class is valid on the basis of confidentiality.
That's a very good point that I didn't even think about, because I was in business class a few months ago, and the guy next to me was looking at all these very interesting financial reports and graphs of where the company was going up and down, and that's exactly right. And I just think that our politicians do deserve a little bit more respect than having to fly. I mean, just because we're looking at the expenses with some scepticism, it doesn't mean that we now have to start using the cheapest form of transport at every opportunity.
No, indeed. And I think we need to draw the line between who's travelling in business and who's travelling in economy. I don't think having the whole family travelling in business to a family holiday is appropriate either.
Unless they're prepared to spend it with their own money.
That's right.
Which then suddenly changes the equation. Now, the other thing has been booing, and of course, I'm sure that you would have heard Michael Martinez and all that this morning. What did you think about Adam Adam Goods, and what do we need to do from here?
Yeah, look, I totally agree. Booing in any form, I think, is atrocious, and I've said this for years, that sledging, booing, all that negative behaviour is so unsportsmanlike. The sooner it's gone, the better. Regarding Adam Goods, I'm one of those ones. For me, one word, racism, absolutely it is. And listening to Kate Jenkins last week, the Equal Opportunity Commissioner, she summed it up for me. She said, you know, when people in this country speak up, that's when they get punished. It's that breaking the status quo that Australians have a bit of a problem with, and I'd fully agree with that, because I find it's not just minorities either, it's marginalised majorities, because I tend to be someone who speaks up and calls things, and I've felt the impacts of doing that as well. So I think, you know, for me, Australians get very uncomfortable when someone rocks the boat. We're a very conservative society. So good on Adam Goods. Keep challenging it. Keep challenging the AFL. I think it's good. It's healthy.
I said before 10 o'clock that I didn't think that this issue was a very simple sort of binary situation where you're either racist or you support Adam Goods, or you're either with the booers or you're with Goods. And I think that it's become very, very binary and very, very polarising. I don't know if you think that maybe, yes, it is that simple.
No, I agree. It has become polarising. I think that's the nature of the media scrutiny too, though. They'll always take the two extreme views. But I think you're totally right. It's lots of shades in there, pardon the pun, but there really is a lot of grey in the discussion. And I think, you know, someone was saying it would have been good if Adam Goods could have played on the weekend, yeah, because it probably wouldn't have stopped. Well, I mean, that's sort of missing for me the point that he's clearly not feeling like it and he's had enough. So, yeah, it's actually about the person and the impact it's having on the person.
So what should we do from here? I mean, I just wonder if the AFL should have got involved, just because now this whole thing has been drawn to light and it's flared up and everyone's come out with their opinion and it's been made into a massive, massive issue. But it sounds like you're saying that they maybe need to call out what's going on.
That's right. And zero tolerance for booing. Either eject them from the ground or, you know, my husband suggested fine the clubs whose supporters are booing. It's like, well, that's another option.
But, for example, Geelong supporters were booing Alan Christensen on the weekend, which they mentioned briefly on the breakfast program, because obviously he left the Geelong Football Club in sort of shady terms, which I don't think we need to go into too much detail on, but some people were a little bit upset about that. So is booing part of the game, or is it right to forcibly eject? Because some people would say, well, booing is part of the game, and how dare you tell me what to say?
Booing never used to be part of the game. I've spent a lot of time going to the football in the 80s and through the 90s, and booing wasn't part of it. The umpires copped a bit, but not even a lot. It was more a case of the crowd shouting what they thought the call should have been rather than booing anybody. Yep. Booing's pretty recent, and it's appalling.
Well said. All right. That's made it very, very clear. So from here, if Adam Goods plays next week, you're saying that we should forcibly eject people from the ground if they boo?
Hmm.
Okay. Yes. Now, the by-election of Kildare, because Stretch Contell has departed, he's now over in the UK. I just think it's very, very interesting what this does in terms of a local government and the politics surrounding it, because we've got the so-called factions and the pro-Lions and the against-Lions. So, first of all, how are the numbers going to change? Second of all, what are the types of characters that we might see popping up to run in this ward, and might you be putting your name down for it?
There's a can of worms, isn't there? Big call to speculate. You know, I don't like speculating. Mitchell. I think it's really exciting. It's a great opportunity for some new blood in the council group.
Which I'd love to see.
Shouldn't use the word blood in the council group, should I?
No, that's right. But I would love to see some new blood. I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah, look, I'm going to actually put it out on Facebook again. I have already, and I think Kylie Fisher posted a reference to the process and the closing date and all that sort of stuff, and I reposted that as well. And didn't get a huge amount of people saying, yeah, let's go for it or let's do it. So I might actually sort of tag a few people in the next one few people in that region and that electorate that I think, or ward, isn't it?
Yep.
Could run, although you don't have to live in the ward, I think.
No.
There's a lot of good Newtown folk, though,
yep,
that definitely sort of graduates of the Leaders Program, all the people that I've sort of studied with, I suppose, about Geelong, and yeah, a few people I'd like to name, but I won't yet. We'll see how they respond.
All right. Well, it's a very big area, because it takes in Newtown, takes in Finesford, it takes in Hamlin Heights, so it's a very big slice of the Geelong region. There's a lot of different groups that make up the people actually voting for it. So obviously we can't really speculate, but what happens if someone gets elected that maybe isn't as pro-Lions as Stretch Contell was?
I think Stretch was definitely a great support to Darren. Look, I think Darren's big enough to stand on his own two feet. I don't think he necessarily needs...
What about the votes, though?
Well, he needs the numbers, but that's always going to be a shifting thing, and it should be according to each issue, in my view. It shouldn't be voting as a pack anyway, but that's just me, isn't it?
Is that actually what happens there?
I think it is, actually.
Yeah,
I do. I have quite a lot of confidence in the council group. Whatever you may say or think, they managed to get through the issues and the agendas, and I don't think it's particularly pleasant sometimes, but, you know, that's okay.
And obviously, as you mentioned, you don't necessarily have to live in the area to run for it, but should the person actually come from that area?
I don't think it's necessary, no. No, I think, you know, as long as they understand it. I tend to look at Geelong as a whole region, rather than specific areas. I think it's probably more likely to have support from someone who lives locally. But I think that area in particular is already reasonably well healed, for want of a better expression, well established, well resourced. So I think if that particular ward could stand for the broader Geelong picture, that would be healthy.
But you're not planning on running?
Not at this point, no.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got that out. So that's going to be interesting. And now the big money for stadium, that just flows on to the next issue. What's going on with that? Should the council just say yes? Christine Cousins, obviously, I mean, their government has put money into it, so they're keen to see it getting up and about. But should the council just tick it off and away we go?
Absolutely. Look, stage four needs to be finished. And as I understand it, the $90 million commitment included that $6 million contribution from council. So there's no surprises, as you said. And I feel like Christine's stolen my thunder a bit with this one, because I completely agree with her. Just get on with it.
Yeah. I just think what hasn't been happening that's been made very clear, and I know that this may be oversimplifying the issue, is to say this is what's going to happen if we do the redevelopment, and this is what's going to happen if we don't do the redevelopment. So, for example, we play 7 or 8 games of football down here. If we could see that that was going to increase up to 10 or 11 and we'd be guaranteed to get a final here if we did it, then I think most people would say yes. But it's not very clear on the table as to exactly what we'll get for our money.
No, and I don't think it can be that clear, you know. As far as I understand it, Cookie works really hard all the time to get that on the agenda, and I think that's it will happen. We will get more games down here, and clearly a better stadium will support that, but I don't think anything's in stone at this point. It's a matter of keep taking the business case to the AFL and pushing for it.
And it's got to be at other events as well. Like, for example, there've been monster trucks there. There's been soccer. There's been cricket as well.
Yep.
So encouraging those has got to be important. So it's not just about AFL.
That's right. And music. I mean, gosh, get some music and other entertainment forms in there too, more into the arts. And get on with GPAC too.
Well, what's happening with that?
I'm not sure when it's going to start. Might have to get
John Mimonski.
Yeah, John or Gillian, and have a chat about that.
Yes. I think we spoke to him at the start of the year when I was filling in with Dennis, for Dennis, and it was supposed to be getting up and away, so I don't know what's going on there. And last of all, on the Bees topics, the Sharks, what do you think about those?
Yeah, well, I was watching, actually was planning to watch 60 Minutes and see Mick Fanning last night, and then there was a shark show on 7-2, I think, that there was some expert swimming around with sharks and talking about the whole issue, which was interesting. But firstly, with Mick Fanning, what interested me immediately following that event was the focus on the blokey punching response. Because if you watch the interview straight after the attack, when he's jumped off the jet ski and gone into the competition boat, so the fellow's got the microphone in his face, and he was obviously still really in shock and impacted, and he was just gorgeous to listen to. He's going, oh, I was just screaming and going, ah, and wondering where it was. But it was the guy with the microphone who actually prompted him with the punch story. He said to him, so did you punch it?
Yeah.
And Mick Fanning said, yeah, of course, I punched it. That's where it came from. And it was really interesting for me that the fact that that became the headline. I didn't say, you know, the headline wasn't, I was screaming and wondering where the shark had gone, which was his natural reaction and what he actually said. So obviously they decided that the Aussie mateship story, because Julian Wilson swam towards him, which was amazing. That's the story we all wanted to hear. Punch the shark and help your mate. And so that's how they packed it up and packaged it up. And that's what's taken off in a way. And so watching 60 Minutes last night, again, that completely real part of Mick Fanning, where he's just such a gorgeous bloke, because he's very real. He doesn't have to be blokey, and, you know, his mum said he's a great hugger, you know, all those sorts of things, which is really lovely. That's the part of him that was really nice to watch. So I was just interested that we had to have punching in there, when in reality it was actually fear and a genuine reaction of, you know, swimming and not knowing what was happening and what everybody would feel.
sometimes it pays to watch an entire media conference because you'll then learn how sort of only a very small amount of the actual quotes are extracted from that media conference, and sort of what's a throwaway line at a media conference is then seen to be the main issue. So I think that's a useful exercise to undertake. But I think punching a shark is probably your natural reaction. If something's coming towards you,
pushing it away.
It doesn't really matter whether you're male, female, whatever. You're going to close a fist and push it away or punch it.
Yeah. I laughed last night when he said, and I swam away and I looked down at my feet and I thought, and he's going to say next. And I realised I still had feet.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He said, I knew how far away I could be, you know. So, yeah, it was interesting. But the other fellow was talking about should they put mesh up on popular beaches. And that was just a discussion that I thought that's probably something that's going to happen at some point. And then you've got the issue with trapping dolphins and seals and other mammals in there. So it's quite an interesting one. He made the point that there's only been one fatal shark attack on a meshed beach. I thought, I wonder how long before that particular discussion starts. Because he said there's more great whites now, quite likely because we've been protecting them for so long, and or because we're actually fishing the predators that eat the younger great whites. So there's more bigger great whites now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a few interesting points.
Well, Current Affairs would be probably my favourite type of TV programmes. And I was just watching, of course, Channel 9 last night, and The Voice ran way over time. Didn't start 60 minutes until 9:25 p.m., which is just, I mean, to start at 9 o'clock is already late enough on a Sunday, but then to have it run 25 minutes late is ridiculous. I just thought, why are there so many reality TV programmes at the moment? What we need is more good Current Affairs shows.
Yeah, agree, or even good drama.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be
some
fun.
Yeah, some decent shows. I agree. Reality TV is cheap and it's lazy. That's why we have it.
And it's good for the Australian content quota.
Mm, that's right.
Which maybe says something about quotas, I'm not sure. But now, I saw ISIS. This was an article that you were reading that you wanted to draw our attention to.
Yeah, there was an article on the weekend by economist Richard Gibbs, who was with Macquarie for 15 years as their chief economist. And his view basically was that the government's got misplaced priorities, and the headline was, we should be focusing on ICE, not IS. And the fact that the point he's making is that the government isn't focusing on the young and vulnerable. They're kind of hanging them out to dry. And I agreed with a lot of what he said, because some of his other examples were dole reform, cutting women's refuges, and a reluctance to borrow from the federal government. And, you know, one of my passions is addressing family violence, so I agree wholeheartedly about the need for women's refuges.
Yep.
And he made a comment that I thought was spot on. He said, it's a tragic irony that in the same year that Rosie Batty's Australian of the Year, funding to women's refuges has been slashed. So she's out there trying to raise awareness, but if women have nowhere safe to go, then what? So I thought that was really good. And also the point about the government's reluctance to borrow struck a chord with me. He talked about the mining investment boom falling off a cliff. And so there are two ways the government can go. They can either cut spending or they can borrow more. And surely the smart thing to do is take on cheap debt right now and invest in some big infrastructure projects. That was his push. And for me, strategically, how about they do that in the context of some long-term planning and a bipartisan approach, not just physical infrastructure, but social infrastructure as well, which then goes back to addressing the youth disadvantage and mental health and all the things that Christine was talking about that earlier too.
I think a lot of people would be sceptical about the taking on of new debt just with the current political climate at the moment. But in terms of ICE, what do they need to do? Because I've been seeing a lot of those ICE awareness ads, and I've said this so many times on the program that if they don't scare you out of using ICE, then nothing will. Where you've got the ad where the person says that you feel like worms are crawling in your skin, or the son or the husband hits the mother. This is in the ICE ads, and also in the hospital one where the person just flips out and goes out of control. Now, that's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the coordinated response is always the way. So it's the police working with the treatment services. And I think as much as anything, a consistent approach around Australia. It's not in any one place. You know, we do hear that it's pockets of it and it's worse in rural areas. I mean, if it is actually endemic, then the system and the response needs to be consistent. But I agree, not just advertising. For me, I keep going back to that expression, party drugs and recreational drugs does my head in. It's drugs are drugs and they're illegal. So let's be clear about that, and let's not have a situation where we're tolerating it and almost encouraging it. I think we definitely need to educate kids, not walk away from it, and explain to them the differences between the different drugs and the risks. But keep going back to that whole point of it's illegal, you know, for a reason too. But
Well, we might talk about that a little bit more next week, because I'll let you go.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much for coming in. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you, Stephanie Asher there. We'll go to a break, track of music, and then we'll look at Monday's sport. What a big week of AFL it's been. Of course, Geelong back in the eight, which is very exciting, but a few other upsets and things as well, which we'll cover after 10:30. It's 25 past 10.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.